So Hare Krishna, thank you so much for coming tonight. It's nice to have all of you here. Today is the first day of Kartik. So tonight, starting at 8 p.m. in just 1 hour, we're going to be singing a beautiful bhajan called the Damodar Astakam, and we'll be offering lamps to Radhakala Chenji. We're going to do that every night for the entire month, every night at 8 p.m. So there'll be a lot of people, nice devotees here tonight, so you're welcome to come. Also, the restaurant's open if you'd like some dinner, or we're serving prasadam also in the next room if you'd like a little prasadam. So generally at this time each night, we read a little bit from Bhagavad Gita. So tonight we're reading from the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. I'm sorry, we actually went to the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. This chapter is entitled Nature, the Enjoyer, and Consciousness. Shishirada Kalachanji Kija Setram Yan Chapimam Vidhi Sarva Shetra Shibharata Shetra Shetra Gyanhur Gyanam Yataj Gyanam Matam Mama. O sign of Bharat, you should understand that I am also the knower in all bodies. And to understand this body and its knower is called knowledge. That is my opinion. Now please hear my brief description of the field of activity and how it is constituted, what its changes are, whence it is produced, who the knower of the field of activities is, and what his influences are. That knowledge of the field of activities and of the knower of activities is described by various sages in various Vedic writings. It is especially presented in Vedanta Sutra with all reasoning as to cause and effect. The five great elements, false ego, intelligence, the unmanifested, the ten senses, and the mind, the five sense objects, desire, hatred, happiness, distress, the aggregate, the life symptoms, and convictions, all these are considered, in summary, to be the field of activities and its interactions. Humility, pridelessness, nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization and philosophical search for the absolute truth. All these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be is ignorance. I shall now explain the knowable, knowing which you will taste eternal. You will taste the eternal. Brahman, the spirit, beginningless and subordinate to me, lies beyond the cause and effect of this material world. Everywhere are his hands and legs, his eyes, and faces, and he has ears everywhere. In this way, the Supersoul exists, pervading everything. The Supersoul is the original source of all senses. Yet, he is without senses. He is unattached, although he is the maintainer of all living beings. He transcends the modes of nature, and at the same time, he is the master of the modes of material nature. The supreme truth exists outside and inside of all living beings, the moving and the non-moving. Because he is subtle, he is beyond the power of the material senses to see or to know. Although far, far away, he is also very near to all. Although the Supersoul appears to be divided among all beings, he is never divided. He is situated as one. Although he is the maintainer of every living entity, it is to be understood that he devours and develops all. Good evening. Hare Krishna. They just closed the curtain now. They're going to open again at 8 o'clock. We'll do a special artik and offering of lamps for Kartik. He is the source of light in all luminous objects. He is beyond the darkness of matter and is unmanifested. He is knowledge. He is the object of knowledge, and He is the goal of knowledge. He is situated in everyone's hearts. Thus, the field of activities, the body, knowledge, and the knowable have been summarily described by me. Only my devotees can understand this thoroughly and thus attain to my nature. So in the material world, the laws of nature control us. And depending upon the particular modes of nature that we identify with and the particular desires that we develop, we gain a particular type of body. You're welcome to come in here. Feel free. Hare Krishna. Yeah, you can come on in. We're just reading from the Bhagavad Gita. You feel free in here. It's no problem. Just like you may have seen this picture inside the Bhagavad Gita where according to a person's desire, they gain a particular type of body. You see? Material nature is divided into three modes: goodness, passion, and ignorance. And depending on which mode we develop within ourselves, which mode we become attracted by or attached to, then that particular mode leads us to a particular type of experience or result. Just like the mode of goodness, it's exemplified by the development of knowledge. You see? Mode of goodness also means the type of diet that we have. Vegetarian food that's natural and that's organic is predominantly in the mode of goodness. The type of association that we keep, you see? All of these things, they will develop the mode of goodness in us. And the result of the mode of goodness is that we perform activities that are beneficial to ourselves and to others. Actually, a human being is distinguished from an animal by this quality. Human beings want to benefit others. They want to help others. They want to develop and improve things. And animals, they want to kill one another. They want to exploit one another. So the mode of goodness, it helps us to develop this nature, this innate or internal nature. Then there's the mode of passion. Mode of passion is exemplified by an over-endeavor for mundane things that are difficult to achieve. You see, I have to have this new car. I need this big house. I need this position. I need more money. I need a beautiful wife. I need so many things. You see, that's the mode of passion. The result of the mode of passion, we're always miserable. Mode of goodness means we're happy. Mode of passion means we're always miserable. We're never satisfied. Mode of ignorance is epitomized by taking intoxication, lethargy, being lazy, oversleeping, eating food in the mode of ignorance. You see, like food that's made of meat, made up of meat, or food that is cooked more than 3 hours. So activities in the mode of goodness, they lead us to basically into a state of madness. We become disillusioned. We become depressed. You see? So ignorance leads to where we completely lose contact with ourselves. Passion means we're always miserable. Goodness means we're happiness. But according to the Bhagavad Gita, these modes actually are not the pure nature of the soul. These modes are influencing us because we are misidentifying with the body and the sense objects and sense objects. Someone might ask, okay, well, what's the purpose of all of this anyway? Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that the purpose of life is to be happy. In Sanskrit, the word is ananda. Ananda means happiness that's always increasing. So Krishna explains that if we try to gain happiness through these modes of material nature, through material things, the problem is that everything material is temporary. So if we try to become happy with something that's temporary, our happiness is also temporary. So when our happiness comes to an end, Krishna explains, he says, Krodha esha kama esha raja guna samadbhava. He says that we become unhappy, we become frustrated, angry, depressed, delusioned, violent. So Krishna explains that pursuing material things is an illusion. It doesn't actually give us real satisfaction. It may give us some temporary sense of achievement. Oh, I've bought this home, or I've gotten this car, or you see, I've got this particular position. But these things actually have nothing at all to do with real happiness. It's just a psychological type of effect that's happening. So Krishna explains in the Gita, he says that these things are an illusion. In Sanskrit, it's called maya. Just like a mirage in the desert, it looks like water. So animals, sometimes they come to the desert, they see a mirage, so they go out to drink the water of the mirage, but when they get there, there's nothing there. And then they look for, and they see another mirage, another mirage, another mirage, and then they die in the desert. So Krishna explains that real happiness doesn't come from anything outside of us. It comes from within us. In Sanskrit, Krishna, he explains this. He gives a philosophical point. He says that achinta bed abeda tattva, that there is an inconceivable, simultaneous oneness and difference between us and the Supreme. I know that sounds very complicated, but Krishna gives a very simple example. He says, just like a drop of ocean water, it has all the qualities of the ocean. It's liquid and it's salty. But the drop is very small. It's infinitesimal, where the ocean is infinite. So in the same way, we have all the qualities of the Supreme, being part and parcel of the Supreme. We're conscious, we're loving, we have intelligence. But we are very small. And the Supreme is infinite, unlimited. So qualitatively, we are one with God. But quantitatively, we're different. So because we have a spiritual nature, we're not this material energy, we're not these material things, we're not this material body. Life doesn't come from matter. Dead stones don't create life. Life comes from life. So, and life is spiritual. Life is conscious. Material things are unconscious. Material things are made up of, in the Gita, Krishna says, he calls it bina prakriti. It means that material things are made up of earth, water, fire, air, ether. And subtle material things are made up of the mind, the intelligence, and the false ego. But beyond all of that is the actual, our actual consciousness. Krishna gives an example. He says, Dihinu smiñata dehi komayam yavaram jara. He says that the body is changing from infancy to childhood to adolescence to middle age and then old age and then death. So even though the body's changing, but the consciousness remains the same. But this point about happiness, so because we have the same nature as the Supreme, when we place ourselves in a spiritual environment, we become peaceful and happy. Just like a fish. If you take a fish out of water, no matter what you give the fish, it's not satisfied. You can give the fish a beautiful home in Frisco, a big box of chocolates, a new car, a brand new iPhone, new clothing, but the fish is always unhappy. Until the fish is put back in its natural environment, the water. So in the same way, because we're spiritual by nature, when we place ourselves in a spiritual environment, we become peaceful and happy. So Krishna explains that the simplest way to do that is through sound vibration. Sound vibration has the most powerful impact upon our consciousness. It's the most sublime, simple, and yet powerful means to affect our consciousness, to arouse our original consciousness. Just like if somebody tells you that they love you, right? Makes us feel really good. You see, the sound affects us. So in Sanskrit, there are spiritual sound vibrations. They're called mantras. Man means the mind. Tra means to free the mind from all misery, from all anxieties, from all stress. Right? You guys know what stress is, right? It's like, that's life, you know? But no. That the reason we're experiencing stress is because we've taken ourselves out of a spiritual environment. So creating that spiritual environment is very simple. It's completely free, and it's invoked by these mantras. So we're famous for this Maha Mantra or the Hare Krishna Mantra. You see it behind me on the board. It's made up of three names: Hare, Krishna, and Rama. So in the Vedic tradition, in the ancient Indian tradition, there is both a male and a female form of God, known as Radha and Krishna. And their loving relationship is the center of the spiritual world. And according to the Vedas, each of us has an eternal constitutional relationship of love and devotion with Radha and Krishna. So this mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare means we're addressing the female, the source of all energy. Krishna means one who is all attractive. He never becomes old. He's never dull. He's the source of everything. He's all exciting, all beautiful, all intelligent, and all loving. And Rama means the source of unlimited happiness, happiness that's always increasing. It never ends. It's not controlled by this body or by the material things. So this mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It puts us in direct contact with our original spiritual consciousness and with the Supreme. Because the Supreme is absolute. That means that the name of the Supreme, the form, the qualities, the teachings, the associates, they're all non-different than Krishna. So that's a little bit of our philosophy. Usually when you come for the first time, we give you a gift. Would you like a gift? Our founder, Srila Prabhupada, you might have seen him before. He was the guru of the Beatles. He even helped them write music. We have some very nice books. We have a new movie. It just won most inspirational movie of the year. It's called Hare Krishna, the mantra, the movement, and the Swami who made it all happen. It's coming on October 9th to the Angelica over on Mockingbird, Angelica Theater. But so Prabhupada, this is a sculpture of him here. Prabhupada, he was the guru of the Beatles, but he also is recognized in Encyclopedia Britannica. He wrote more books than Shakespeare. He wrote over 100 titles like this, about 500 pages each. He's responsible for over 600 million editions of his books in 82 languages and about 460 centers like this. No, now we're up to 650. I just saw that. 650 centers worldwide. And we have beautiful eco-villages. Right now we're working on one of the largest structures on the entire planet. It's the third largest building in the entire world. It's called the Temple of Vedic Planetarium. Prabhupada, he had an axiom. He said that religion without a scientific basis or a scientific process to realize the soul in God is simply sentimentalism. And science without an absolute truth, without an ultimate reality, is simply mental speculation. Like Prabhupada, they asked Prabhupada about Darwin's theory, and Prabhupada said, your forefathers may have been monkeys, but mine were not. I mean, he made a joke out of it, but what he wanted to show was that the Vedic literature, it actually gives a scientific basis for the origin of life, the creation of the universe. So he laid the cornerstone for this beautiful Vedic planetarium, and Prabhupada, good evening, Hare Krishna. One of his disciples, his name's Ambarish, he's the great-grandson of Henry Ford. His mother made him the main stockholder of the Ford Corporation. He owns about 45% of it. And he married a wonderful lady from Jaipur in India. And they're leading this project called the Temple of Vedic Planetarium, TOVP. But anyway, Prabhupada is a prolific writer, and I want to give you guys a gift, so just give me 1 minute.